Cloudy with a chance of showers prior to 2, then some clearing. Windy today, they say 2. Look for a high 72, clear in 44 tonight. Forecast brought to you by the SIU Credit Union. They have great rates on auto loans. Apply online at siucu.org. So tomorrow, sunny 74, 78 on Wednesday. Wednesday night, 54. Then we see much cooler temperatures and a chance of showers about Thursday. A daytime high of 64 and a low Thursday night as cool as 37. It's 722. Illinois State Representative Patrick Windhorst online with us this morning. Morning, Patrick. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Good. You know, when it comes to ethics reform, you're on the committee. You know, I get an amazing amount of traffic here whenever I talked about you, for instance, come and join us this morning on this issue. And people are really frustrated. The inability to get traction on this. And I would probably feel that you've probably got that sense as well. Delay, 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 delay. You know, we just can't seem to gain traction. Move forward.
Oh, yeah. It's been tremendously frustrating. I think you're aware, and I believe your listeners are, we haven't met since March 5th as a commission. We were right at the end of our work. The only thing we need to do is prepare a final report, discuss the issues we heard, and present it to the General Assembly. Well, now we're more than 7 months away from that date. Other committees and commissions have met in that time. In fact, we have almost regular joint committee meetings with the Senate going on weekly now. So it's just making abundantly clear that this ethics reform is not a priority for the Democratic leadership in the General Assembly. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want legislation brought forward. They don't want to vote on it. And it's made things very frustrating for me.
And from the same group that you hear the term justice delayed is justice denied. Here's an example of some of the messaging traffic I've received just this morning. Why does ethics conduct have to be negotiated between our elected legislators when by the sheer position of being elected to represent the United States, its citizens, strict ethics should be a complete given of their personal conduct? You cannot legislate personal integrity or conduct. It's called moral integrity. And I think there's a point there at some point. You know, it's against the law. People are going to break the law. What can we do in legislation to stop lawmakers from being lawbreakers?
Well, that's true. If people broke laws since laws existed, but laws set out for us in society what is acceptable conduct and what is not acceptable conduct. And there are a few things that have come to light since this has begun last year that shown that there are things that are actually not against the law that most people think should be. One very simple one is legislators serving as lobbyists.
Yes.
I would have thought that legislators can't be lobbyists. Well, in Illinois, they can. That needs to be against the law. We need to expand the amount of information legislators like myself give to the public as far as our conflicts of interest, personal background, financial background. That way, it's clear to the public where our interests lie, and they can examine that when they decide who they vote for and who they support.
This almost dovetails.
Just a few examples. Go ahead.
And some good ones, too. I mean, that thing with the lobbyists, because I didn't know, but I did know that very often when a legislator loses an election, they register as a lobbyist the next day. I've seen that go so many times, right? You know, when it comes to this ethics committee and the special investigative committee in the same time and space, right? A specific here that's being dealt with when it comes to breach of public trust. But it does highlight the work of the ethics committee.
It does. It shows that this is needed for many reasons. And we had some specific examples last year that brought to light some issues that need to be addressed. But when our commission was meeting, there were other broader issues that were discussed. One of them you just mentioned, the revolving door between legislators and lobbyists that needs to be examined and closed by putting a time frame, a moratorium on. And then we have the issues with the speaker, which put in greater relief the connection between those in power and campaign finances and also hiring practices in both government and private industry.
Yeah, especially the hiring practices.
These things are just becoming very clear that they need to be addressed.
I keep thinking that in the federal government, if you leave office, you have a period of time in which you're not allowed to be a lobbyist. And that's clearly not the case in Illinois, but it sounds like a good idea when we're talking about it. You can't be a lobbyist while you're a legislator, and there ought to be a cooling off period after you are before you go into the lobbying industry.
Oh, exactly. And the question is, how long does that last? Is it a one-year cooling off period, two, three? There's been basically three different proposals put out there with those time frames. You know, my personal opinion is it's 2 years. That way you get past the General Assembly you served in, so there's less influence that's exerted by the person in office. But, you know, I think any period of time would be better than what we have right now.
Fair tax. Big money. I saw another group out, I think, from one of the Carolinas sending money, one of the PACs sending money to the pro-fair tax movement here. I even have a problem with the name fair tax.
Well, there's an issue about what fairness means. I guess everyone defines fairness differently.
It does.
Right now, our tax structure is if everybody pays the same rate, if I make more money than you, I pay more in taxes, but I pay the same rate. Some people would define that as fair. Others have defined fairness, obviously, with this constitutional amendment. One of the biggest things I'm hearing is people are confused about the wording on the question. And I don't know if that was intentionally done to make it confusing so people would vote yes if they intended to vote no. But it's clear that this is just one more example of Springfield trying to take something that could have tremendous negative impact on our economy. We just talked about ethics and ethics reform. There is a lack of trust in the leadership in Springfield. And my concern, one of the reasons I voted no against the constitutional amendment, was are we going to trust them with more authority to tax, more authority to impose upon businesses and citizens in our state? I don't think we should do that. And I'm not going to trust the leadership in Springfield with that opportunity.
Yeah. And you know what I find interesting about that? How much is fair? How can you define what is fair of another person's wage? The interesting aspect. When it comes to money, the frantic efforts, we have to have stimulus money, we have to have stimulus money, we have to help our communities. When we've seen the help that's sent in many pretty rather strict ways, the cure money specifically hasn't arrived. I mean, it's really a process that's going on right now. How many, I know the DCEO sent out a letter asking representatives to say how many communities in your district had asked for their turned in their certification for cures money. Is there a number? Do you have that number, Patrick?
I do not have that number. That's something I can get, though. But it's something that has been, that need has been seen since March, or maybe even before that, that we need some help from the state on what the state has imposed upon our local governments. It's not so much that the government, local governments have done anything wrong. It's just the state has made some mandates and requirements on them that they need relief from. Now, one of the issues we're seeing with the way the state set up the program is there's not going to be as much relief available for the states because of the requirements that exist in the law. The requirements will prevent local governments from being able to access some of the funds unless they can demonstrate there's a specific public health need or that there are medical expenses, some of which we've not seen in our communities yet, although we may be getting to that point as it's hit the rural areas later than the urban areas. So the state needs to basically step up with what it's doing and make sure that it's supporting the local governments.
You have seen some COVID uptick in your district.
Yes. We actually had a call yesterday with the governor's office and representatives from the Illinois Department of Public Health regarding Region 5, which is the region that covers all of my district and most of southern Illinois. And their concern was our positivity rate was approaching 7, or it had maybe even exceeded 7, and then the next step is 8, and at 8 there is mitigation, like we saw in the Metro East most recently. So they were wanting to make local officials and legislators aware of that issue and ask that we communicate with the public the fact that that danger zone has been reached with a positivity rate. So we've seen several counties, Union County, Jackson County, Saline, Massac, that have seen increases recently. And, you know, in some settings like Shoah Developmental Center had a recent increase, I believe 84 cases in the last 10 days or so. It's something we just need to be aware of, that we need to social distance where we can, wear face coverings when we can't social distance, and wash our hands. It's just those three things do as much as anything to keep the positivity rate down.
And what Patrick is talking about, the warning list here, Jackson, Jefferson, Johnson, Massac, Pulaski, Saline, and Union counties are right there on that edge of that warning, on the warning list right now. You know, so much has been put back, like the Madigan hearings, until after the election. Have we gone into political paralysis here until after the election in Illinois?
I would say so. It doesn't appear, in fact, it seemed like about midpoint of last month that really nothing was going to get done until after the election. There have been some committee meetings to meet virtually over Zoom to discuss criminal justice reform and economic opportunity and some health care issues. But those are just kind of getting things teed up for the veto session, which will occur after the election. But I don't think we'll see any movement. I think the chairman of the Special Investigatory Committee for Madigan has made it clear we're not going to see any movement there until after the election.
You know, I see a note here saying that the question on the ballot about fair tax is misleading wording and should be thrown off the ballot. I could swear, Patrick, there was a lawsuit that stopped those ambiguous questions that were no was yes and yes was no, that those were no longer allowed on the ballot, and there was a standard for those where there wouldn't be any ambiguity about what you were voting for, the yes or no. Wasn't there?
That's right. I believe that's right. I know there was a challenge to this.
Yeah, but I think there was a law drawn up because we had seen those that, you know, that were literally no was yes and yes was no, and those were no longer allowed on the ballot. And I knew that was a court ruling.
That's right. Now, this one, there was a challenge that was filed, and I believe a court ruled late last week that the question was worded appropriately and would not be tossed from the ballot. So this one is going to go forward, and the count we made, I suppose afterwards someone could still file additional lawsuits for that appeal. Of that lawsuit could occur, and there could be additional legal action that would prevent it from being implemented if the question was not worded appropriately. But it's definitely confusing, and there have definitely been information that's been put out that tends to be pro the yes vote or pro the graduated tax. And, you know, I think I laid out pretty clearly that I was against that. I don't think that that's the direction we need to go as a state. One of the best things we have going for us, we have very little that's pro-business or pro-taxpayer in our state, and this the flat tax is one of those things that is, and it's unfortunate that that's going to be challenged and potentially lose that protection.
Illinois State Representative Patrick Windhorst, 734.